I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Nate Parker's debut film, The Birth of a Nation, won the Audience Award and the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance this year. The moviegoers and Fox Searchlight hailed the depiction of the largely forgotten story of a slave insurrection in 1831 led by Nat Turner. There was Oscar buzz for Parker, who starred in, co-wrote, and directed the film from an industry that has been criticized by the hashtag #HollywoodSoWhite. Here's a trailer for The Birth of a Nation with Nina Simone singing Strange Fruit.
7 feet barren, strange fruit.
Heavenly Father, we come to thank you for your word and your will.
Blood on the leaves. And blood at the roots.
You listen to him, and you might just make it into heaven.
Amen.
Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze.
Submit yourselves to your masters with all respect.
Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
Brethren, I pray you sing a new song. Sing praise in the assembly of the righteous. Let the saints be joyful in glory. Let the high praise of God be on the mouths of the saints and a two-edged sword in their hands to execute vengeance on the demonic nations and punishments on those peoples, to bind their kings with chains. Dishonor have all his saints. Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. Sing to him a new song.
Just before the film opened in movie theaters, reports surfaced that Nate Parker had been accused of rape in 1999 while a student at Penn State. He was acquitted, and the woman who accused him committed suicide in 2012. He's been criticized for how he has responded to the allegations. We're going to talk about all of this with our guests here on Radio Times, and let me introduce them to you. Kimberly Roberts is the entertainment reporter, for the Philadelphia Tribune. And Kimberly, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Sarah Roth. She's an associate professor of history at Widener University and has a new archive. It's called the natturnerproject.org. You can check it out. It includes maps, articles, interviews, and news accounts of the slave rebellion. And Sarah Roth, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you both here. Kimberly, let me begin with you. You interviewed Nate Parker this summer. What did he tell you about why he wanted to make this film?
Well, basically, he grew up right around the corner from where the Nat Turner Rebellion took place and never heard a word about it. He said, you know, he heard whisperings from his parents or anything, but he never knew what it was, never heard of it. And it wasn't until he got to college and took an African-American studies class that he heard anything about it. So he just thought that it was a story that needed to be told in general. More about what happened during slavery itself.
It's interesting because he said he wanted to make a kind of a brave heart take on this particular story.
Yes, and in his mind, it fell along those lines about somebody who finally took charge of, you know, his situation and got his people to do the same thing. And he really focused on that theme from the beginning.
Sarah, do you think it's unusual that people, including adults, do not know the story of Nat Turner?
Well, in a way, it is unusual. I mean, it was such a unique and important moment in American history. But at the same time, it kind of makes sense because here you have a black man who was challenging really every aspect of American society at the time that was sort of state-sanctioned in the form of slavery. And so, you know, we're not always comfortable with African-Americans who stand up for themselves, particularly if they use violence and particularly if they use violence against whites.
Which is all part of the story. And I do want to get to that. There is this controversy, as I mentioned, about this particular film in that the filmmaker himself was accused of rape. Now, Kimberly, he has said, and he was exonerated, that
yes,
needs to
was.
Be said mm-hmm. as well. But there have been criticisms of just about how he has handled the controversy,
yeah.
what he has said. Has he been contrite enough? What's your take? And then I do want to play
I don't
clip.
Know if he has been contrite enough, but in his mind, he was tried, he was acquitted, and he really believes that what he has done since that point, it has no reference with what happened then. And he really feels that he just wanted to make his film and get on with his life because he was acquitted.
Well, let me play a piece of an interview. This is Nate Parker being interviewed by Anderson Cooper. This was on 60 Minutes. Anderson Cooper asking him why he didn't apologize mm-hmm. to the accuser's family. And I should said reiterate the fact that the woman who accused him of the rape, the sexual assault, did commit suicide in 2012. Obviously, a very tragic end to a life. But let's give this a listen.
You haven't apologized to the woman or family. Do you feel, do you have anything to apologize for?
I'll say this. You know, I do think it's tragic, so much of what's happened, and the fact that the family's had to endure with respect to this woman not being here. But I also think that, you know, and I don't want to harp on this, and I don't want to be disrespectful of them at all, you know, but, you know, at some point I have to say it. You know, I was falsely accused. You know, I went to court, and I sat in trial, you know. I was vindicated. I was vindicated. I was proven innocent. I was vindicated. And I feel terrible that this woman isn't here. You know, and I feel terrible that, you know, her family had to deal with that. But as I said, you know, apology is a no.
A very emotional mm-hmm. description of what went on. And Kimberly, for some people, that is enough.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, they say nothing he can say
yeah.
is really going to allow me to forgive him for what happened.
Right. Well, the way our justice system works is if you're tried and you're acquitted or have done your time, you should be able to get on with your life. And I feel like that's what he believes that he's doing. And I think he said by, you know, making this film, he really feels like he's contributing, you know, beyond what a normal person could do because of the position that he's in. But like you said, there are some people who just said, you know, they just can't get past, separate the art from the artist.
And there are other directors that we've had to struggle with that. Woody
yes.
Allen,
Roman Polanski.
Roman Polanski.
Yeah.
There's frankly a long list there. And I have to say, having seen the film, there are several rapes in this film.
Mm-hmm.
They are, of course, horrifying. And it does sort of raise those questions about seeing this on film
yes.
and the mm-hmm. allegations.
But
then
that's
against
what happened. That went on all the time, you know. So if you're going to deal with a story about that, you have to include that.
Your thoughts, Sarah? I know you're probably a little bit outside of this as a historian,
a
but
bit.
You've seen the film.
I have. I think that including the rapes in the film makes it a more powerful film in the sense that it gives you an idea of why, especially black men, would mm-hmm. do what Nat Turner did and what the people who were with him did. In other words, fight back against white slaveholders and try to end slavery. I mean, it's a very American masculine concept that black men or any men are supposed to, you know, avenge the rape of or the sexual abuse of their women.
Mm-hmm.
It's so curious because this film is called The Birth of a Nation.
Yes.
And we know about D.W. Griffith's film,
yes.
Kimberly, which was essentially kind of a KKK
yes.
mm-hmm. view of American history. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a film, it was pretty extraordinary.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But as the story in the film, it's actually pretty horrifying.
Yeah.
Why did he use that?
He
that
did.
Title?
And he felt like that was his way of taking power away from that film by telling a story where the slaves were actually empowered. You know, that was a deliberate choice to use that title.
And we were talking about mm-hmm. this, Sarah, before going on the air about how we view this part of history and certainly this insurrection. But there were other events, slave, either, if not revolt, certainly ways that they pushed back against the institution of slavery.
Oh, absolutely. Resistance was almost a constant in slavery in the United States and anywhere, actually. Even in the very area where the revolt took place, this was not the first moment when slaves were even using violence against slaveholders. There were moments when they when individual slaves killed their masters or killed slave traders, where they burned slaveholders' property, their houses, where they ran away, stole things. I mean, the spectrum of resistance was really broad.
And do we not know this, or do we not know this well enough?
I think it's much more comfortable for many Americans to think about slaves as victims than to think about them as fighting back on a regular basis. So, yeah, I think it would be, and I think this film helps to do that, to bring resistance into the story more.
Well, in general, there's a lot that we don't know because this was not taught in school. I'm a baby boomer. And I, you know, grew up in the Philadelphia public school system. That was not in our history books. There was no mention of it. We didn't find out, like, our whole education basically was Lincoln freed the slaves. And that's all. No, nobody told us what happened, how they came to be slaves. So many of us did not find out a lot until we got to college and we started taking black African-American studies classes. But overall, slavery was just not taught in schools. Anywhere, as far as I know, like, you know, I know a lot of people, like, you know, my sorority sisters from across the country. We didn't, you know, we didn't get that education, and it was not in our books.
You're not quite a baby boomer, Sarah, were you?
Well, things have changed over the last probably 30 or 40 years. Well, 30 years probably. the students that I'm getting now, they have studied slavery, but it's in a very superficial mm-hmm. kind of a way.
Superficial and sort of a version of Lincoln freeing the slaves?
That is definitely there, but it's mostly that slaves were victimized, which they were, of course, but there's this kind of general sense that slavery involves picking cotton and being whipped. There's a little bit of the story of running away, because Harriet Tubman mm-hmm. is well known among people today as well, and her story. But I think the level of resistance, the amount of resistance that happened is not really told.
Well, let me quickly reintroduce the two of you and also give out the phone number. And also, we got some comments coming in as well. We're talking about several things in this hour of Radio Times. The true story of Nat Turner, a Virginia-born slave. He was a minister, a leader of a failed two-day slave rebellion in 1831. And it's also the subject of a new and controversial film called The Birth of a Nation. It's directed, written, and produced by Nate Parker. We've been talking about the controversy surrounding him. And we're going to take a very short break and open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes at whyy.org, and you can tweet us at whyy Radio Times. And I have to say, in preparation for the show, someone told me this morning, I just don't want to see another film about slavery anymore. So stay with us. Much more to talk about after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking with Kimberly Roberts. She's entertainment reporter for the Philadelphia Tribune, also with Sarah Roth. She's an associate professor of history at Widener University and has put up a new archive. It's called the NatTurnerProject.org. We linked it on our Facebook page, full of all sorts of really fascinating information about Nat Turner and his slave rebellion of 1831. We're talking about that. We're talking about this new film, The Birth of a Nation, and its director, star, and producer, Nate Parker. Calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Sarah, let's talk a bit of history here. And I did go to your archive. So we're talking about Southampton County in Virginia. When you go back to 1830, there were more blacks in this county than whites, although most of them were slaves. Some of them were free blacks. Were they free because they had been freed, or they were free just because they were born free? Explain that piece of the story to us.
Sure. In 1831, about 11% of the population of Southampton County was free blacks. And what had happened was, back in the late 18th century, There was a religious revival in the area that kind of swept through the South even. And it didn't have a lot of impact in some areas, but in Southampton, it prompted certain masters to decide to free their slaves. And so there were these families of slaves or of African Americans in which some branches were free and other branches were enslaved by 1831.
And so all living amongst
all
each
living
other
in the same neighborhoods.
In the same neighborhood. And what do we know about Nat Turner himself?
Well, we know a few things. We know that he was born in slavery in 1800. We know that he had several masters over the course of his life. We think we know that he was married to a woman named Cherry and that he and Cherry had a son named Riddick. They may have had more children. It's not really clear. We know that he lived on a relatively small farm in 1831 with only a handful of slaves and that he was an agricultural laborer.
Could he read and write? I mean, in the film, it's clear that the slave owner's wife teaches him to read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
That's true? Not true?
Well, he was literate. He could read, and he did read the Bible. He, in fact, had in his possession, when he was captured, he had a Bible, which is now in the Smithsonian, the new Museum of African American History and Culture. Whether his mistress taught him to read, we don't think so.
You think he might have taught himself to read?
Well, in his confessions, he says that he sort of miraculously just knew the letters of the English language whenever he was shown a book as a small child. It's much more likely, of course, that someone he knew taught him how to read, and possibly even his parents. There are many questions about, you know, how they could have learned how to read.
Yeah.
It's possible it could have been white children in the area who helped him learn as well.
Kimberly, what did you make of the depiction of slave life, if I can put it that, of slavery itself?
It's basically what I've always seen whenever I see movies like Roots and the movies I've seen about slavery. It's always painful to watch. There's a scene in The Birth of a Nation, Nate's version, where somebody's being force-fed, and it's amazing how creative this torture was. You know, like, how did he come up with this stuff?
But and these were for runaway slaves.
Yeah, you know, so it's you know, basically what I've always seen, and I think that's why, you know, even though these films are, you know, these stories need to be told, sometimes African Americans are you know, kind of like resistant because, like, you know, who wants to watch that? And then Caucasians, like, you don't want to be sitting next to an African American who's saying this, and you know, and they're getting like, you know, so they're like, we don't want to see any more slavery movies, you know. So I can see there, you know, there's kind of a resistance to them, but yet, and still, the stories need to be told. You know?
What I thought was interesting, Sarah, was the family or the man that owns Nat Turner, I mean, compared to some of the other slave owners, was more benign. But what you also see is that he's still implicated. I mean, he's still implicated in the institution of slavery. And when all is said and done, he still controls Nat Turner's life, even though he, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, is not as cruel as some of the others.
Mm-hmm. I think, though, it makes a lot of sense that someone who was as intelligent as Nat Turner and who was told many times during his life that he was special and that he wasn't really fit for slavery. And he was told that by African Americans as well as whites. Mm-hmm. If you're told that since you're a small child, even if you have a master who is supposedly lenient or not as cruel as other masters, there's still a frustration there. Mm-hmm. There's still an anger that, you know, you know that you are as good as this person, if not better in certain ways. And yet he controls your movement. He controls your body, everything about you.
And once you cross a line, he will beat you.
Yes. Yes. And there is now evidence that Nat Turner was whipped during his life, not in the way that it was depicted in the film, but that did happen.
And it's interesting to try to understand his religious beliefs or even leanings. In the film, it's, you know, he's a preacher and he's taken to these various plantations to tell the slaves that, about the Bible saying, you know, subservience is a way of of being faithful to God and you'll be rewarded in heaven. How should we understand, Sarah, his faith, such as it?
Yes.
Well, as we can understand it.
His faith was very much a product of the early 19th century. He had he did study the Bible, but there was more to it for him than that. He felt like God had and the Holy Spirit had directly spoken to him and told him that that there was a big change coming and that he would be an important part of that change. And he saw visions to depict that. He saw blood on the corn, which is, it does sort of show up in the film. He heard the voice of God, he thought. He saw visions of white and black spheres colliding and other things like that. So none of that is really depicted in the film, but I think it's an important part of why he decided to do what he did, and also how he convinced other people to join him.
Because he had seen visions and he believed that God was telling him to do, to essentially lead this uprising?
Right, exactly.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you, talking about the film The Birth of a Nation, The Life of Nat Turner, who led a slave rebellion in 1831, and again, talking with Sarah Roth. She's an associate professor of history at Widener University. Kimberly Roberts is entertainment reporter for the Philadelphia Tribune. We have seen the film, and we are talking both about this film, The Birth of a Nation, and its director, and also talking about this important piece of history that, frankly, a lot of people don't know a lot about. 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get some callers in, and then we'll get back to the story as well. We've got a lot of people here, including Sarah from Center City, Philadelphia. Sarah, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
My father was a history teacher, and I remember him talking about this, that the Nat Turner Rebellion was actually a rebellion of both African-American slaves and poor white farmers. And the breaking of that alliance was one of the seminal reasons for the failure of this. It also, according to my father, was the beginnings of the breakaway of West Virginia from Virginia, when they broke off after at the Civil War.
Well, Sarah, you called the right place.
I haven't seen the film, so I don't know if that's included.
Well, let me put your history question to Sarah Roth. Go ahead, Sarah.
Sure. Well, in this particular case, in Nat Turner's revolt, there were not white farmers involved or poor whites. That did happen in other revolts, usually much earlier than this. But I would certainly agree that the revolt itself brought into the limelight the difference between Western Virginia and Eastern Virginia. In 1832, right after the revolt, the Virginia Assembly met and talked about whether to end slavery. And it was a very clear geographic distinction in the vote, so that West Virginians or Western Virginians at the time voted often to end slavery, and those in the East not to end slavery.
Sarah, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me read some comments here. One from Andrew: we've had enough race baiting and leftists calling our nation racist. No thanks. Hollywood is anti-American and anti-America. I understand the story has a lot of bloodshed. While slavery was brutal and nasty, the uprising did not help the situation because it was also brutal and nasty. I will pass on this, I think, maybe on the show, but also on the movie as well. Comment from Maureen. It's because of the uproar with, she said she won't be seeing the film because of the uproar with the director, tired of men taking advantage of women. I'm done. An email from Susan: what do the guests think about the issue of reparations? So obviously it's a story and a movie and an issue that raises a whole host of questions. Kimberly, what did you think about just the depiction of the women in this story?
There are several scenes, a couple, at least one or two, that the men had to stand by while their women were raped. One was like, you know, and the master was like mocking him, you know, while this was going on. And that was portrayed as, you know, part of the reason for the rebellion, even though, like, reading some of the historic account, you know, some of the posts by historians and history teachers, they were saying that wasn't the only reason, but that absolutely, you know, it absolutely did happen. I thought, and somebody thought it made the women look weak, but I think historically it's known that Black women are not weak, you know, and in any stretch of the imagination. As a matter of fact, we had to kind of take on masculine characters because, you know, like a masculine, you know, character almost, because they were not being protected. You know, so I think it was, you know, it might not be the whole story, but it is part of the story.
Sarah, do we know the actual reason for the insurrection? I mean, as the film depicts it, it's both the rape of his wife, mm-hmm. And also there's another woman who is basically, we don't see anything, but we just see mm-hmm. her in tears, and she's been taken mm-hmm. to that plantation house and given over to someone to obviously. Mm-hmm. rape, and then we see her coming out. Was that the reason for Nat Turner's wanting to have this insurrection? Do we know?
The sad thing is that we don't know. We don't know the whole backstory at all, even though we have what are supposed to be his confessions and his explanation for why the revolt happened. It's very focused on, well, first of all, the document we have was written down by a white man, a white Virginian at the time. And so we don't know what was left out that Nat actually told him. We don't know what was left out that Nat didn't want to tell him. So there's not, what we are left with is this religious explanation. And
about the Bible?
And about his visions and about God telling him that this is what he has to do, that he's been chosen for this mission. And so we have a small bit of evidence that Nat was whipped at one point about 3 years before the revolt for saying that Black people should be free and that they would be someday. But that is really all we have. We have one other rebel saying that his life is worth no more than anyone else's and his freedom as dear is what he said. And so I think it's, you know, there are these little hints, but that's all that we have.
And do we know how many? And the goal was to kill white people, I guess, to what, start a revolution, or was it a suicide mission? What do you think the thinking was?
I believe that they wanted to terrorize whites in order to convince them that slavery was too dangerous for them to continue. And that, I think, is one of the reasons that they also killed women. They also killed children.
Do we know how many? It was, what, 50, 55?
About 55.
And how many were children, do we know?
We do. There were, I believe, about 17 under the age of 15, something like that. 10 under the age of 10.
Are we still trying to figure out whether he was a terrorist or a freedom fighter?
I think so. And I think many of the comments that have come up from the movie, from some of the attention that Nat Turner's been getting, suggest that, yeah.
That we're still struggling with this. Go ahead,
Kimberly. I think it would be your perspective, you know, if you were a slave who, you know, had been undergoing this type of treatment for however long, he would be a freedom fighter. If you're somebody who did not want to release your slaves and wanted the system to continue, he was a terrorist, you know, so I think it depends on your perspective.
Let me get some more callers in. We've got Jim from, looks like, University City. Hi, Jim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I read William Styron's book, The Confessions of Nat Turner, last year, and the most striking thing that occurred to me when I was reading this about what happened to slaves was their deprivation of education and kind of forced illiteracy. And I see that as the most harmful and legacy that the African-American community bears today. And going forward, I mean, I never need to see another picture of a poor slave being beaten and tortured because their bodies have recovered. But to keep their minds enslaved by the kind of education systems that we subject them to, I know how it goes in Philadelphia. Mm. They don't get what they need. And it's generation upon generation, and literacy is the thing that is going to free the African-American ultimately, and I wonder if your commentators can comment on that.
Sure, Jim. Thanks for calling. It looks like, Kimberly, you want to say something. I want to toss something to you, Sarah, as well.
Well, indeed, it was a crime to you could actually be killed for teaching a slave to read. If they found out that you could read, the result would be the same thing. So the education is, you know, really the key to empowerment. Even then, you know, if this slave can read, he's going to find out what we're doing. He's going to tell people, you know, and ultimately that's what happened. You know, so it was actually a crime to teach a slave to read. And if they found out that you were could read, it was a problem. You know?
Almost up on a break here, about a minute there, Sarah. But when he said The Confessions of Nat Turner by William Styron, you rolled your eyes. Oh. Why is that? I know this. It's a loaded book that he wrote.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was very controversial when it was released. And in fact, that was going to be that book was going to be turned into a film, you know, originally. But there was so much, you know, he got so much flack for it that it wasn't. It's a problematic book in that it does, as many authors have tried to do, it tries to get into the mind of Nat Turner based on, you know, such a lack of documents. And he comes across as a manipulator of his own people. He comes across as kind of weak once the revolt begins and torn. And not to say any of that's wrong, but it is a little bit problematic, I think.
Kind of a Rorschach, right? For a country, a people, a time.
Absolutely.
Let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Sarah Roth. She's Associate Professor of History at Widener University. She has posted an archive. It's called the Nat Turner Project. You can check it out at thenatturnerproject.org. Kimberly Roberts is with us as well, entertainment reporter for the Philadelphia Tribune. And again, talking about several things, The Birth of a Nation, this new film, also talking about the Slave Rebellion of 1831, led by Nat Turner. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more to talk about after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me read a couple of comments here. A tweet from Mama O says, I think it's important that this movie replaces the originally titled one, The Birth of a Nation. How can we change what is being taught in today's classrooms? I want to help facilitate change in my kids' schools. An email from Joseph. It's about time that more people got to know this story. An email from Nick. I think it's important to keep slavery in the forefront of our minds until enough generations have had a hand in prolonging its collateral effects that have been passed on. A comment from Michael. I saw it because I studied history in college and grad school, interested in the subject. I was a little disappointed. It's not bad. This is the film, but it's rather underwhelming and, dare I say, safe. There's not much to wrap your brain around, and it borrows a lot from other and better movies. So kind of a nice mix of comments there. Sarah, let me go back to you and go back to this slave rebellion. This was a two-day rebellion. They used whatever weapons they could get their hands on, I guess axes and other forms of weaponry.
They did. They used axes, swords, so farm implements essentially too, until they actually started to break into the homes of slave owners and kill them, and then they would take their firearms. So by the end, they actually were mounted on horses, and they had quite a few guns.
And was Nat Turner able to get more people sort of – it only went on for 2 days, but more people to sort of join this rebellion?
There were recruits that they did attract along the way. There's not a clear number that we have, but possibly 40 to 60 slaves largest point.
I mean, we know it failed – it's hard not to think of a suicide mission. Think that 30 or 40 slaves could end slavery somehow.
Well, I think that what they planned to do was to kill as many people as possible, and so kind of startle slaveholders throughout the South and certainly throughout Virginia into deciding that, you know, this is too costly for them to continue.
And what were the news accounts of the time?
That's one of the really interesting parts of this story, because often when a slave revolt broke out or was planned in the South, I should say, there was a real effort by whites to cover it up and to not let this be in the news. But for the Nat Turner revolt, it was front page news in really a lot of places across the nation. And it was, especially at the beginning, there wasn't really accurate information. And so what they're spreading are these wild rumors about hundreds of slaves coming out of the swamps, you know, killing hundreds of people, taking control in different towns, which was, of course, not what happened at all.
I wonder how the slaves knew about it. I mean, there's a reference in the movie to some kind of communication, mm-hmm. but how word spread among the slave population.
Well, according to the film, Nat's vision was that thousands were going to join them, you know, which obviously didn't happen. I think they were just at the point where, like, we have to do something. You know, you say that there had been other rebellions, you know, but in his mind, since he felt that he was the chosen one, and the accounts that we saw on screen were, you know, and gave him initiative to finally do something, you know. So I think, but obviously thousands did not join them.
Right,
you know.
Right. And Sarah, do you think the film depicts the reality of what happened in terms of those couple of days of insurrection?
It doesn't. I don't really want to give away too much, but no, it doesn't. In the actual rebellion, the slaves went together as a group to each house. There's one or two points where they split up into smaller groups, but they went together to each house, killing every white person that they saw, including, of course, men, women, and children. And then they're actually stopped short of their ultimate goal.
And defeated, I guess, and many of them mm-hmm. killed. Nat Turner escapes for a while.
He does. He's in hiding for about 10 weeks, and he's in hiding right in this immediate area, in a place where everyone knew him, where, you know, it's where everyone's looking for him, and yet he's able to evade authorities for more than 2 months.
I don't think this is giving it away because this is,
it's,
you know, 1831
yeah.
and it's history.
Yeah.
He is found. He's found guilty. He is hung. But then his body, what, dismembered? Mm-hmm. Is that the right word, Sarah?
That's some accounts do say that. He definitely was decapitated. And I believe his skull has actually recently turned up in Gary, Indiana, of all places.
Oh, my goodness.
So they're still working on that. Yeah. But there are some kind of horrific descriptions of his skin being turned into purses. And
I read that.
And his,
is that true? Not true? We don't know.
We don't really know.
I've read some accounts from historians online who are just like outraged because like this didn't happen, that didn't happen, and I wanted to tell people who were interested in seeing the film about the concept of dramatic license in Hollywood and what's sometimes called creative license. I describe the film as Nate Parker's interpretation of the Nat Turner Rebellion and the events surrounding it. So they were like a romance might be inserted just to put people focus on somebody, and give them a story to follow. Like if you've seen Titanic, which I'm sure you both have, there was no Rose and Jack on the Titanic, but James Cameron put them on there because they need you to connect with somebody. So when that ship went down Rose, whatever, just keep on living, and you were like, oh my God, you know. That's Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But as a historian, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go
that's
ahead.
What I'm saying. The historians are like, that's not what happened.
Well, one thing that did bother me is that there's no indication in the movie that Nat Turner or any of the rebels was actually put on trial.
Mm-hmm.
And they were tried in a court setting. They had attorneys appointed to them as defense attorneys. And that's not to say that, these Virginia authorities were really trying to be fair. I mean, they were to an extent, but I think to me it says that this was all a part of the punishment of slave revolt was all a part of the American justice system. And that
and you're saying there was a little bit of justice or there was at least they used the court system.
Well, I'm sort of saying that, but I'm also saying that, you know, punishing slaves was a state sanctioned mm-hmm. Enterprise. And so, and that doesn't show up at all in the film.
Let me get back to our callers. Looks like we've got Paul from Center City, Philadelphia. Hi, Paul. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, indeed. Go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to say that I think that this is just a comment. It seems like slavery is very much with us, and it seems like about half of the country never really thought about it, never really thought about how horrible spending one's life, birth to death, and seeing one's children born into slavery was, and just ignores it, doesn't think about it, never thought about it. And that's kind of contributed to our politics today. We have half the country that supports a man who is very much like the slave owners in temperament and psychology. And some of their cheers and chants show that they have no sensitivity whatsoever to what actually happened and to the enormous crime of this country. It would kind of be like if half of Germany was Holocaust deniers. And that's my comment.
Sure.
And thanks for letting me say it.
Absolutely, Paul. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Kimberly, I don't want to get off too much on a tangent,
right.
But I think his original point is that we're still grappling with this. We still don't want to entirely understand.
Yeah, because it's uncomfortable. Like Paul just said, when they, make a film about the Holocaust, people are, oh, the Holocaust. And the Holocaust was terrible. But that white America was not responsible for the Holocaust. That was those horrible Germans. But because white America is responsible for slavery, not all of them, but the ones who were. And like I said, like the previous caller said, as far as the education and the advancements, it's still, it's underlying. But the Holocaust is like, never forget. But slavery is like, get over it, people. That's basically what he's saying.
Well, Sarah, again, you're the resident historian in this room here. And obviously part of the job of a historian is to tell us our history and the importance of understanding our history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so interesting to me how much just these vitriolic responses to something that happened almost 200 years ago, and the people who say, Nat Turner was a monster because why are we celebrating him? Because he killed women and children who were innocent. And I think that does a couple of things. I think it misses the point in a way, but I think it also shows us that there are these really, really close to the surface, these tensions, this anger, this frustration over these racial issues right now.
Do you think this film helped? The theater was pretty much empty, and I know that there's been so much pushback on the film, it's hard to know how many people are going to see it. But do you see this film as a possible corrective to that? Or is it too loaded, or does it not tell the history in the way you want it to be told?
First of all, people who tend to be opposed to Nat Turner are not going to go see the film. And so that's an unfortunate thing. I think those who do, it's a good portrayal of him as a person and it's a useful portrayal because he is very mild-mannered, he's very reasonable, and he acts in logical, rational ways. And so I think if you can kind of get past that, the strong feelings that a lot of people feel and actually see the film, then yes, I think it could have some positive effects.
Kimberly, you want to add to
and
that?
The timing of the release was just like the same day that this movie opened is the day that the Donald Trump tape came out. It was the exact same day. So if you've got somebody who was accused but acquitted of rape, and then you've got this Trump tape saying, oh, he's going to grab him by the whatever, the same day, there's going to be people are going to say, hey, and maybe not, So the film did not fare as well as they hoped it would. It made just over $7 million. And of course, they had hoped for better. But like I said, the timing of it was really, could not have been worse.
Well, this is the world that we're living in here. Let me read a email from Dee, actually. Whoops, there's Dee. Okay, is it fair to lump him in with Roman Polanski? Did Roman Polanski submit himself to the American justice system? Although Woody Allen says that his relationship with his wife started after she had an adult after she was an adult. Many people find the relationship distasteful and outside the social norms. Are these fair comparisons to Nate Parker? I mean, not everything lines up perfectly, obviously, but there are people who will not see a Woody Allen film or a Roman Polanski film because of how they interpret what these people either did or didn't do. A comment from Timothy. I think the film suffers from too many liberties taken with the historical record. It seems like where Parker didn't have historical fact, he substituted his politics for the narrative drive. It just wasn't as strong a film as it should have been. What do you make of that?
Well, like I said, this is his interpretation of the Nat Turner Rebellion and the events surrounding it. And when I had a chance to talk to him, he gets emotional, as you heard on the tape that you heard
with Anderson Cooper.
He gets emotional when we directly questioned him about that, and he just basically said, "Well, I just hope that people will see the person that I am now and the work that I'm trying to do." And he really, you could just tell he was just like, "Please don't ask me that," but you have to ask him.
Sure, you do.
You have to ask him. So and he just gets very emotional about it, but I think this is his way of trying to this is a poor equivalent, but Ryan Lochte is now on Dancing with the Stars. And it's the same thing, well, I did this, but watch me do that, know, and it's the same thing. He's trying to repair his image. Nate Parker, of course, has got a bigger, more grandiose stage, but Nate Parker is, shows that he knows how to do this. This will not be his first effort. And he is trying to move in the right direction.
Sarah, I'm looking at the clock here. In terms of just finishing up some of the history here, so after the insurrection is put down, even after Nat Turner is executed, what happens in this particular county? Do they use this insurrection as a way of really holding down the slaves there? Did they begin to think that perhaps slavery was a brutal institution?
Well, they...
Or something else?
No. In Virginia as a whole, or slaveholding parts of Virginia, there was... What happens often after a revolt or even a planned revolt is that whites would crack down on the slaves. And they did that. They did that through laws. They did that through actions. There was lots of vigilante justice... or justice, vigilante violence after the revolt as well. And that kind of, it's a human thing. You're reacting to a very stressful moment. And then after that, things just sort of go back to the way they were.
To the way they were.
Yes.
So just, and then of course, then comes the Civil War finally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 30 years later.
And this part of Virginia, this is a particular part of Virginia. Where is that in Virginia?
It's southeastern Virginia. It's a very rural area. It still is actually Southampton County. It's not closely connected to large cities. It's not on the coast. So it's kind of a backwater, as it was back then.
And is there a marker for Nat Turner there?
There is. There's a marker for the rebellion. There is no monument, although some people working with Nate Parker are hoping to create a monument. There is a Confederate soldier monument, however, in Southampton County.
Well, Sarah Roth, thanks for coming in. Thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And she is an associate professor of history at Widener University. Again, we have posted the Nat Turner Project.org on our Facebook page. Kimberly Roberts, thank you for coming
in
as well.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Entertainment reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer.
No, a lot of
excuse me, the Philadelphia Tribune. Absolutely, you're absolutely correct on that. I apologize. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program. Lots of comments, lots of calls here. Obviously, lots of interest in this very important issue. I'm Marty Moscoing. Thanks for joining us.